Stop me if you've heard this one before. Alien spaceship, rocketing towards Earth, lands in a small town in Kansas, right by a farmhouse. An older, childless couple comes out, and inside the spaceship, miraculously, is a baby boy, wrapped in a blanket, cute as could be. They take him in, raise him as their own, and he exhibits superpowers. Superman, right? Obviously, it has to be. Who else could it be? Well, it turns out it could be Brandon Breyer, the main character, or one of the main characters of the 2019 movie Brightburn, which is kind of a horror twist to the established Superman / superhero formula. It's getting a lot of buzz, and I thought I'd drop in and talk about it. The original plan for this week's episode was to review the John Wick trilogy, all three in one episode, but last week there wasn't an episode because Josh was sick, and this week he's still sick. It was looking good yesterday, and today, you know, confirm, hey, you're still coming over. He was feeling worse, so we're pulling for him. Hopefully he'll be good by the time summer starts, because we're going to start cranking out episodes, believe me. We shouldn't have many episodeless weeks, but for the time being, I decided to do a little experiment, do a solo episode, so this is totally self-conducted, so I won't have anyone to play off of, which will kind of ruin the discussion element of a podcast, but hopefully it can still be a good conversation, provide insight, review, such and such. But yeah, real quick before I start, the John Wick trilogy is still slated to be our next episode. So, and if that falls through, then I might try to call in an understudy. There's a few people that have expressed interest in joining us on this show, so we'll see. That might not happen for a long time down the road, provided that Josh gets better, which I hope he does. I really hope he does. All right, Brightburn. Like I said, it's getting a lot of buzz. It's produced by Blumhouse Pictures and like 18 other studios. I swear to God, I checked the time. There was 1:04 of logos in this movie. Kind of crazy. But yeah, so Blumhouse has got a reputation for lower budget, small scale, and like kind of toned down, like not super crazy high concept horror. More kind of localized, like I said, small scale. And this is no different. This movie takes place over about a week, maybe a week and a half. And it actually breaks from a lot of things that I thought it would do in terms of established horror tropes. So, yeah, made for a very small budget. I would have thought, based on the way it looks, around $10,000, $15,000. From what I can find, it looks like it's about $2,000, which is the actual estimated budget for this movie, which, if that's true, they really stretched that far. This movie looks amazing. It sounds amazing. It's got a great atmosphere. They really did a lot with such a small budget, which I think is really impressive right off the bat. But, yeah, this movie, let's see, who does it star? It stars someone I sort of recognize. I felt like I'd seen him in something before. One of the two good child actors in Hollywood today. Alright, so Brandon Breyer, the titular character, is played by Jackson A. Dunn. And his parents are played by David Denman and Elizabeth Banks, who were both really, really good. They were definite highlights of the movie. Actually, I'd like to get into some more specifics once I actually cross the spoiler barrier. And oh, shit, no way. He was in Avengers Endgame for like 5 seconds when, spoiler alert, when Scott Lang's traveling through time, but he's coming back and it's the different versions of him. He's the 12-year-old Scott. Huh. That's cool. That's crazy. Yeah. Back to back. Jeez. Kid's got a hell of an agent. Alright, but yeah, like I said, those are about the three main characters. Brandon Breyer, Kyle Breyer, and Tori Breyer. And it's this tight-knit family unit. We see from the opening scene the whole rocket ship thing I described. You know, the Superman origin story, basically. And they're small town Kansas people, you know, farming, hunting. It's like, you know, it's a very like simple life, and you know, they're just kind of living their life until suddenly shit hits the fan in a pretty big way. Broadly, I would just say that this movie is definitely worth seeing. It is a really, really good movie. It's really tight. I mean, you're gonna be in and out. It's like 90 minutes, and it moves at a clip as well. There's a lot that happens, and it happens in a really short amount of time. This is one of the best paced movies I think I've seen in a while. For the most part, it's not to say I don't have any complaints about the pacing, but on the whole, I thought it was very well done. I think it was very well written too. There's not a lot of moments of like painfully obvious exposition. It trusts the audience for sure, and like I said, the pacing is really good. It's very well structured. The dialogue is, I mean, it's not Shakespeare, but it's very real, and it really helps ground the story. It does a lot, and in conjunction with the performances from the leads, this really feels like a real place. Like Brightburn, Kansas feels like a real town. It feels lived in. This family feels like they've been a family for a while and are, you know how to play off of each other. There's a lot of things that I think are really well done here in terms of writing, character building, performances, all really, really good. The direction is also very good. This director I have not heard of, David Yarovesky. I'm assuming he's an indie director, probably horror. So he's had a few starring roles, and he was one of the Ravengers in Guardians of the Galaxy, but it seems like he's mostly directed short films. But this is cool. This is a good jumping off point for him. I would say there's only a few complaints I have about the movie, but they're more spoiler heavy things, so I'll wait to get into those. But in terms of positives, I guess I'd just also like to add that there's a lot of really cool kills in this movie. Like I said, it looks amazing. It's very well shot. It kind of breaks from, it breaks from and also doesn't break from the common current horror movie aesthetic and camera work. You know, the whole thing, if like someone looks in the mirror, there's nothing there. They look away, they look back in the mirror, and there's something behind them. You get a lot of scares like that, but I think it's cool. It's kind of different in this movie because there's the element of he can be anywhere, kind of, and you just don't know where he'll pop up next. So there's that kind of suspense, and I think that's really well done. But for the most part, I think that's what I would describe this movie as. Very well done. Like I said, it does give in to some current horror tropes, slash like teen tropes, even superhero tropes to some degree. But that's a little more understandable because it's clearly intended to play off of them. The other traps it falls into, it's a little more, you know, it's a little more annoying because it's an independent film and, like I said, first time director, it seems like, and like very well written, very well acted, and it just kind of seems like, oh, you had it going really good, and there's just this one thing where it kind of sucks that that happened. You'd hope that it would keep that good streak going, but yeah, well done. Very good. I would definitely recommend seeing it. Even if you're not a big horror nut, I think this is a lot like It 2 years ago. It's a very good entry-level horror movie. Like, even if you're not big into horror, or even if you haven't seen that, you know, that many, or even if you are big into horror, I think you can still appreciate it. But it's good for, like, lights out, popcorn in the basement, sleepover kind of, like, thing. You know, it's good for that kind of thing. Just an entry level, not gonna blow your mind or anything, but very good. Okay, so spoilers now. There are actually, while it's not anything endgame level, there are a few cool surprises and neat scenes in this movie that I would say, if you have any interest in it, just go see it. Like I said, it's 90 minutes, and then just come back to this. I think they're worth seeing before you have them described to you. But yeah, if you don't want spoilers, jump ship now. And I'm gonna talk about this movie in depth. And I'm glad because I felt like I was kind of spinning my wheels in that intro. It's kind of hard, you know. It's different when I'm just sitting here alone, nobody to talk to. That got really depressing for a second. Sorry about that. Anyway, yeah, like I said, performance is very, very good. I think that's the number one thing I'd like to hit on. From the opening scenes, you get a lot of something I've been growing accustomed to and kind of falling in love with recently, which is a style of filmmaking and writing where you portray things not kind of fantastical or not fantasized, really, but, like, much more real and not necessarily grounded where we're in the sense of, like, if you think a lot of times edgy things are meant to be, like, this is real, this is gritty, you can tell because of the characters all wear normal clothes and the punches really hurt. And, like, I'm not necessarily talking about that. I'm talking about, like, real human situations, identifiable conversations, and places, like, you know, times of your life that you've either been in before or can recognize, and then, in addition, dialogue that feels natural to you, like, something that you could hear someone in your own life say. I've really started to fall in love with that, as I finished Saga. That was something that I really, really liked. That comic is excellent at, really portraying, despite the fantastical backdrop, it's really good at grounding its story and characters in the very real, conflict of raising a child. And there's a lot of that in this movie too. They kind of hit some of the traditional, like, teenage / puberty kind of cornerstones. Like, he gets the talk at a certain point in this movie and that kind of thing. He starts, you know, noticing girls, and they find, like, you know, some, like, underwear model, like, cutouts from magazines, like, stashed under his bed and stuff. And so that's kind of recognizable, but then, like, also the way the parents handle it, like, the way they play off of each other, the dad's version of the talk is a very inexperienced, you know, he's kind of tumbling through it and not really sure how to answer his kid's questions or, like, how really to explain it. He's kind of just being, like, from a guy's perspective and trying to be man to man, but he's kind of being awkward with it. And that's something that, you know, I could see happening with my own dad, which I think is really cool because that type of thing grounds this story, because a lot of it is identifiable. You know, there's scenes that take place in diners and schools and like in a small town, like that kind of stuff that we're all to some degree familiar with. But I think the thing is that once the crazy stuff starts to happen, like once he puts on the mask and he starts flying around and lasering people's faces off and throwing cars and all kinds of stuff, you gotta have the backing of, like, these are real characters, these are real thing, like, real situations. There's gotta be real stakes. This is something that, for a more recent example, I think Shazam does really well, you know, showing you real people, showing you, you know, what are the stakes are if the heroes lose, you know, what kind of characters am I sympathizing with, what's this story built around. And I think that's very important, because it helps keep you attached to an otherwise unrecognizable story. I would imagine most people don't have much experience with 12-year-old alien mass murderers. So, yeah, performances, dialogue, oh, man, it's all really good, especially when the parents are, like, alone and, like, debating what are they going to do with all this crazy stuff that's been happening, and they have different points of view, and the mother has a very traditional movie thing where she's kind of in denial for the vast majority of the movie until, really, the climax when she starts finding, you know, hard proof that this is his fault. And I think that in this movie, unlike a lot of others, it really works. You're not screaming at the screen like, you idiot, it's so obvious. It's more of a thing of, like, it is, you know, the signs point to it, but the whole, you know, innocent until proven guilty, beyond a reasonable doubt, that sort of paradigm, it really applies here. And, like, you're thinking, well, this is from a mother's perspective. I can't have a kid. I feel blessed with the fact that one landed from the sky and it's mine. It's no one else's. He came to us. It's a blessing. It's a gift. And everyone should be grateful for it. Like, we shouldn't be trying to blame all this horrible shit on this child just because he's different. But it, you know, eventually she can't hold that viewpoint anymore because all signs point to the contrary. But it's very interesting to watch her struggle with that and to kind of see how her refusing to give in to the signs that would say you're child clearly insane, and the dad kind of, immediately giving into those sensations, and the way those two viewpoints bring them into conflict and kind of rip family apart and cause disagreements, it was all very identifiable and, like, you know, real struggles that you could see. Like, you've had friends or you've had family members where you just don't agree with them and you feel like, but you know I'm right, and you can't get them to come to your side, and it's hard. And it was very good. This movie tapped into that very well. Like I said, it really helps to ground the story. But okay, enough of the parents. They actually, I would say they probably were my favorite part of the movie. But yeah, let's talk about the titular character. Let's talk about the guy who's on the poster. So Jackson A. Dunn portrays Brandon Breyer, and he is really good. He's very believable as a teenager. A lot of the stuff he says doesn't seem awkward or forced or unnatural. And his dialogue, the way it's written as well, seems very evocative of, you know, what a real kid would sound like, which is often a hard balance to strike. There are a few problems I did have with his character and some of the situations he's in at the beginning of the movie, when they're, like, showing him in school and the way, you know, he talks to people at his school, or, like, you know, he gets bullied. Like, it's such a common thing. Like, almost every superhero is bullied. You know, Spider-Man was bullied, Superman was bullied, Batman was bullied, like everybody, they're all bullied as children. Rorschach, even, if you want to go super obscure. But this one, it was especially terrible, or not, I guess not terrible, but it was especially painful. That's also not the right word. It's on the tip of my tongue, but I can't think of it. But anyway, it was a weird juxtaposition, because I've been praising, you know, raving about how good the writing was and how good the character work was, and yet still, it would sometimes fall into those traps where, you know, they have, like, a gym scene, and he's playing the game, but the other kids don't really like him, and they're being kind of rough on him, and, like, he falls down, and the girl, actually, I will say, the girl calls him a perv, because he's, like, spying on her, with superpowers, and it's really creepy. And she's totally right for being like that. But I give her some credit for that. But, like, in the classroom, there's, like, this fat kid in the back of the room who's like, I guess he's a real big nerd. And then everyone laughs. And it's like, come on, what are you, a sitcom from the 90s? Like, this isn't Saved by the Bell. This is a horror film in 2019. Like what the fuck? Like, you'd think we'd be past that at this point, but clearly not. I really think there's very few movies that get school right, and this definitely wasn't one of them. I think, actually, what would have been really cool was to pull from some Stephen King and in this movie, because Stephen King taps into a side of childhood that is very rarely explored, where some situations and some things, like, either the way you learn them or just learning them, it's really fucked up, and sometimes sometimes even the most disturbing aspects of his stories are not the supernatural stuff. It's not the stuff that's designed to be scary. It's not whatever monster's on the cover. It's scenes that aren't often highlighted, and, like, you know, the way bullying is portrayed and the way kids talk to each other and the things they think about and, you know, the way that what you're going through at that age manifests itself. He taps into that in a way a lot of writers really don't, and I think that would have been really interesting if, like, maybe he can't make friends with a lot of the regular kids, or, like, with the popular kid who's bullying him, or this hot girl, but he maybe does fall in with, like, you know, the kids who, like, once they leave this town, maybe aren't gonna make it that far. Like, maybe they make it to the city and join a gang or whatever, you know, like, the future for them is not bright, but maybe he falls in with them and starts learning, like, kind of horrible things, or, like, that kind of adds to it. It's, like, them pushing him to go farther with it. Like, you know, he breaks this girl's hand and, like, you know, he's retaliating against the people who have been pushing him down. And so then you have this group of people, like, pushing him up. And I think that's... Okay, so I realize I'm kind of writing a different movie here, But the only thing I would say in support of that change would be that one of the main things I didn't like about, besides the unrealistic school stuff, there was two other complaints I had about Brandon as a character. The one isn't really, okay, let me just get into it. I think that he didn't really have any enablers. What I mean in terms of, like, either morals or an external force. Because throughout the film, it seems like what is driving him crazy is the messages he's receiving from the ship he arrived in, which kind of makes sense. Superman's drawn to his ship, and it's one of the first things that leads him down the path of good. Whereas this, if you want to create more contrast, then the storyline would diverge. When he's being drawn to it, he doesn't learn things that make him be good. He learns things that make him go bad. Whereas Superman has a conversation with a holographic projection of his father that tells him, you're here for a reason, you're more powerful than them, and you have the right and almost the moral obligation to protect them because you love them. You know, he's grown up all his life thinking he is one of them. And at the critical point where he learns he's different, he learns that that has value. Whereas here, it's you know, he's had a normal life. He's had, you know, a normal childhood, an idyllic one even. But then he learns about this side of himself, and that side of himself is telling you, you have these powers. You could rule the world. Like, that's his goal, is take the world. That's what that's the only phrase in this alien language that he learns, is take the world. And some of the drawings that he has, it's, you know, it's him, it's conquest. But I think that then that comes into conflict with a lot of the scenes where you see him almost fighting it, or, like, the way he almost is bipolar about it, like, you know, he's just starting to go crazy, and then he stops, or it's almost like he's in a daze, and he's being drawn to this thing, and he can't stop himself, and then his mom has to kind of break him out of the spell, and then he immediately doesn't know where he is, what he's been doing, and I think that's fine if you commit to that, but there's no real clear moment where it transitions into, you know, this has been mindless, this has been me being zombified by something I can't control, into a point where it's like, actually, I kind of like this shit, and it doesn't matter if it tells me to or not, I'm just gonna go murder everyone. So I think it would have been more interesting, especially if, because this movie is so short, I'm sure a little more length could have helped with character development, or you could have maybe cut out some of the scenes where they're kind of spinning their wheels. It's like, you're doing some stuff, and we suspect you on it, and he's like, no, I didn't do that. And they're all like, oh, but he's so cute, though. He can't have done that. And then they kind of let him off the hook, even though you know that he shouldn't be. So you can maybe cut out one of those and interchange one where it's like, he's discovering these certain things from other people, maybe, or something. I don't know. Or even almost at war with himself. Like, I want to be good, you know? I've been raised to be good. All these things I've been taught, these Kansas values, this homespun farmer shit. And then eventually he's just like, ah. But, you know, that's not me anymore. And I know that's not me, and never really was. I don't know. Something like that could have been more interesting. Because in the final scene, the final real line of the movie is, or one of the final lines of the movie is, he's talking to his mom. This is even in the trailer. And he's like, I want to be good. I really do. Or something to that effect. But you haven't really got the sense of that the whole movie. It seems more like he's malevolent. Like, he puts on the face, the cute, obedient child face, in public and in front of his parents. And then, on the sidelines, he's, you know, he's murdering people. So it's kind of weird. It's something that I think they either you take out that line or you build that up more. I don't know. I think that would have been helpful. But to not go off on too much more of a tangent, I just wanted to touch on the other. Actually, you know, weirdly, I think the most problems I might have with this movie might actually be Brandon. That's so weird. I didn't really realize that until this point. Interesting. Okay, so the other real problem I had was he, you never really get a lot of him being normal. You don't get a sense that he has any other friends or that he, you know, you don't really get like that day in the life sort of thing. I mean, you sort of do, but it's kind of only two scenes, and they're in service of something else. Like they're kind of set up. They're not necessarily just, hey, this is establishing what I am, who I am, what my days are like. So the one is he's with his dad and they're like fixing the deck or something. And then his dad's like, oh shit, I forgot to do something or whether, can you handle the yard? And he's like, yeah, I can handle the yard. And then he's trying to get the mower to start and he can't. And he like, you know, he's pulling the cord really hard and then he just pulls it so hard and he like flings it across the field and then he runs, it's still running. He starts to hear the faint voice of the ship and sticks his hand in the blade and he breaks the blade but doesn't cut himself at all. So that's obviously setting up his powers. And then the other one is the one in school, which I briefly touched on, where the guy's like, what a nerd. And it kind of sets up that he's smart, which is important, I actually would say. And awkward. That also is set up. But the girl kind of likes him, likes his awkwardness, and she kind of, like, gives him a cute smile and stuff. So you're setting up that girl for later, and the whole time he's drawing in his notebook. He's drawing the weird, like, BB symbol. And so that's setting up all those things that'll be paid off later. It's not just there to be, like, this is, you know, this is my typical dynamic. Actually, there is one that pushes what I'm saying, the sentiment I'm echoing, a little further, which is his birthday party. But that's also setting up stuff for later, which it sets up the diner for the mom of the girl he has a crush on, that's his first victim, is that mom. And then also, you see him use his powers. And I could see someone listening to this and saying, yeah, that's cool, but wouldn't you say that's a really well done script then, that, you know, they've disguised all this stuff as, you know, just a random scene, but it turns out you're seeing a lot set up that'll be paid off later. And to that I would say, yeah, that's true, and that's probably part of the reason that this is so tight and so fast. But I would also say that I think there's value in seeing this kid a little more as a normal kid. Like, just because I really think that prior to that first scene I described, where he's talking to his dad, you really don't see him as just a normal kid. Like, you don't ever, fall in love with just, you know, this cute little kid who's just being a kid, and then all of a sudden, oh shit, like, you don't get that mother's perspective. A lot of that isn't really on the page. It's carried through the performances, and I think it would be a stronger movie if you could more sympathize with the kid, because you've seen the way he is before all this stuff happens. Because even, I don't know, it's hard. I would assume that me saying that, if you've seen the movie, would cause you to, you know, kind of think back through it and see whether or not you agree with me. I don't really want to explain every scene in this movie with the kid in it. But I think that would have added value, because a lot of the birthday party scene and the school scene, you're seeing him be weird. You're seeing him not act normal, whether it be him writing the weird symbols or giving a really long answer that establishes he's kind of intelligent, or the power scene, or even the birthday party scene, he also uses his powers. So you're seeing what's different about him, but not what's normal. I don't know if that makes sense. God, this must be really boring to just hear me ramble on and on. Josh, what do you think? Well, Giovanni, hold on, let me back away from the mic. Well, I think that I'm still sick. You should stop making fun of me. All right, Josh, that's a good point. Let me continue. I hate to do this, but... But I swear I'll get to the positives with the movie. And like I said, I'm generally positive. These are nitpicks. They're not things I thought about while I was watching the movie. They're all stuff I thought of when I was formulating my thoughts after the fact. Except this next one. What are his powers? I'm a little unclear on them. Excuse me. I've been talking for a while. I'm a little confused on them, because it would seem, at first glance, he just has Superman's powers. Laser vision, super speed, flight, super strength, invincibility. But every time he uses his powers, the lights flicker. Or something malfunctions. And so my question is, can he control electricity? Or, does him using his powers make electricity malfunction? Or, what's really going on here? Because even with the first kill he does, so the lights start flickering, and then she looks up at the light, and it explodes, which is something that lights don't typically just do on their own. And so I'm wondering, did he make it do that? Or when he kills the uncle, the car stops in the middle of the road, and then he lifts it up and drops it, which, can I just real quick take a detour and say, holy fucking shit, that was the coolest thing in this movie. That, and when he killed the mom, I feel so bad. I'm rooting for this small child murdering his entire family, but it was so good. I'm always rooting for a cool kill. To spoil a little bit of my thoughts about John Wick, I kind of measure a movie, especially an action or horror movie, by if it can make me be like, oh, God! And that kind of grossed out, but also damn, that was awesome way. So a lot of times when John Wick, has a really nasty kill, or, he hits a nice headshot, that'll make me be like, oh, damn! Or Jackie Chan movies make me do that all the time. But it doesn't always happen in horror, because a lot of kills are not insane. What jumps to mind for me as an insane kill is that part in one of the Friday the 13th movies, or my bad, Nightmare on Elm Street movies, where Freddy puppets that dude by his blood veins. He makes him into a puppet with his veins. It's grossing me out thinking about it. But anyway, creative, crazy shit like that. And this movie, you see him lift the car up, and I was like, oh, he's just gonna drop the car, it's gonna be smoking, or it'll explode or something, and then we won't see anything. But when you see that his jaw goes through the steering wheel, I was like, oh my god, I'm fucked up for thinking that that's cool, but damn, that's cool. I don't think I've ever seen that before. And when he takes the mom up and drops her, I was like, fucking shit, that is terrifying. And then the jet comes right at him, and oh man, the perfect cover-up. But with if I could double all the way back to the beginning of the picture, it explodes, and the shard gets in her eye, which, oh my god, I'm sorry, I'm gonna go on another quick tangent. I need somebody to rein me in. That fucked me up. God, I'm really sensitive about eye stuff, because I was once hospitalized for they told me a 1 in a million, they get one case of this every 2 years or something crazy, they said, for this near fatal eye infection that started in one and then spread to both of my eyes, and it was horrible, and I was in the hospital for a week, and it was nuts. And ever since then, I have been acutely aware of everything that happens to either my eye or somebody else's eyes. I'll always tell somebody if they have something in their eye, or if anything ever remotely hurts, I'm like, ugh. So seeing this, oh my god, I can't believe I didn't run screaming from my room, because, oh man, that's horrible. I wouldn't wish that on anyone. But yeah, it did confuse me a little. Was that something that he made happen, or was it just but it can't be a coincidence. I don't know. I guess we're supposed to just take that leap. So let's talk about some cool stuff. Kills. I think this is a great movie for kills. Like I was saying, I'm always down for a cool action scene or a cool kill, and I think this movie was full of them. I liked the twist on on the laser vision thing, like, I was surprised by how long it took. Like, it didn't just obliterate his head. It was just like, oh, man, it was, it makes it more horrifying. And I think that was good. They did a good job of that. Like I said, the final kill and the stuff with the jet, and they're like, it killed all the people on the plane and the residents of this house, except for this kid. And I was like, oh, he covered it up. That's really cool. It's a good plan, honestly. So there's that, and there's one, the jaw one. I think the only one I didn't like was the diner one. And then the other thing I would say is, I think this movie is tight, it's fast. It's maybe a little too fast. I think it could have served the story well to slow down a few times. Not to say that there's not a lot of slow scenes. Like I said, there's a lot of good character building for 90 minutes. There's a lot of 2.5-hour movies that don't even nearly reach this level of falling in love with characters, but I don't know. I think I was weird. I think, like I said, I think the one thing I didn't like was I felt like there was maybe just one too many scenes of the, like, oh, he can't be doing it, and, it's not him, but, but then it really is, and he's just playing it off like, that's fine. And, I felt like they just spun their wheels just a little too long, and I was kind of, after a while, just waiting for, like, oh, can you just go kill some people, that sounds terrible to say, but, it's a horror movie, I'm looking to get what I paid for. But, yeah, I don't know, that might have partially been due to marketing, like, the way they sell it, they kind of give you all the kills, because there really only are, like, 4 until the end credits, and so I thought that was interesting, because I was expecting, the climax to just be him going crazy, and it really wasn't, and I was surprised about that. So I think that might have been just my predisposed expectations, but I don't know. Maybe other people don't have a problem with that. I just think it could have done with a little more, maybe a little less, did he do it or not, and a little more, he's doing something. But speaking of him doing stuff, I think it was really interesting. So the Superman parallels are obvious, and once you get to the end credits sequence, the Justice League parallels are also pretty transparent. I thought something that maybe just stuck out to me, because my favorite comic of all time, like my favorite comic series of all time, if purely for nostalgia, is Brian Michael Bendis's Ultimate Spider-Man. This book had a lot of influence on my art and the kind of serialized story that I'm accustomed to. And it's really the Spider-Man that I default to. And a big part of this is, him going through high school and dealing with the repercussions of leading a double life. And so it's not uncommon to have a scene where Aunt May or someone is, they're looking for him and they're like, where's Peter or whatever. And he's out there saving the world. And I thought it was fun when, actually, so this directly reminded me of, this is a scene from the 3rd volume. So he's down in the basement. He's just been talking to Mary Jane, and he just got his ass handed to him. Like, he's beaten up, he's bruised, he's bloody, he's got a swollen eye. And Aunt May comes home, and he's downstairs still in costume. And so she's calling for him. She's like, I swear I'm talking to myself. I brought home dinner and everything. And he climbs up the side of the house and then, falls into the bathroom because he's, he's still uneasy from this fight. And then she, kind of awkwardly goes upstairs, and you have to make an excuse. He's like, oh, I'm in the bathroom or whatever. And I thought it was cool because you got to get that same thing. She comes home and she's like, I brought Chinese or whatever, and she's, calling up the stairs and kind of looking for him, and we know he's out murdering, but I thought it was kind of cool to see the juxtaposition of, it's not him being a superhero, it's him doing nefarious stuff. I thought that was really cool, it was really well done, whether it was intentional or not, which I highly doubt it was, but I thought it was it was cool to play off of that trope. So I think those were the big points I wanted to hit. I'd like to briefly touch on the end credits. So in between, like, the big credits, you know, you get the title card, and then it's directed by, what's his face? And then in between, they're cutting in news footage of him doing more of this terrible stuff. And so I'm theorizing he just stopped keeping it a secret. Like, either they try to put him through the foster system after they find him in the rubble or whatever, and then he's just like, nope, and probably killed his foster family, and then just started wreaking hell on Brightburn. But then the real big thing that everybody's been talking about is the last news stuff you see. And that stuff is this kind of eccentric, almost Bill Maher type, he sounds like Woody Harrelson, guy, and he's breaking down the news, and he's talking about the supernatural stuff, and he's like, the half-fish man that's sinking ships in the Pacific, and this crazy witch lady who's killing people with a rope. And immediately, if you're a big comic nerd, your mind jumps to, oh, that's Aquaman and Wonder Woman. You know, the rope is the golden lasso of truth, and half man, half fish. Well, that's maybe inaccurate, but that's basically what Aquaman is. And I think that is awesome. I guess I wasn't really done. I have a lot to say about this, as it turns out. Big surprise with this episode. It's half as long, and there's only one host, so whatever. Anyway, I think this is a great idea. I would love to see more stuff. And it doesn't even necessarily have to directly tie in to Brightburn. Like, they don't have to meet Brandon or, like, team up or something. But just to see more dark or unusual versions of superhero stuff, I think would be fantastic. And I would love to see it. I'm a big proponent of, instead of, this really hit me when I was looking at I saw an ad for Men in Black last night, and I was like, God damn it, like, what point are we so desperate for the next big franchise that we'll go back to Men in Black? Like, I mean, it wasn't even that long ago, like, the last one was like 2004, and even that, like, I don't know. I feel like at that point, a lot of people thought they were grasping to make it a franchise. And inherently, that concept, a secret agency and then a world of aliens, it lends itself to a lot of creativity and a lot of cool stuff. But, like, I don't know. It's just weird to go back to that particular sandbox. Like, I just feel like I would be much more interested in, if you grew up with that, if you loved Men in Black, then write something or direct something that is in the vein of Men in Black. Maybe it borrows the secret agency element or this world of aliens thing, or like aliens in New York, I don't know, any one part of it, and make it your own. Like, I mean, Back to the Future was a cultural touchstone of the 80s. Like, almost everyone knows those movies, but stuff like, I don't know, what's jumping to mind is like Hot Tub Time Machine. That is way more interesting to me than just Back to the Future 4. I'd so much rather see that, because it's, you know, it's playing with the same ideas and like messing with time and like kind of having fun with it, but then it's kind of a big responsibility, but it's kind of skanky. It's a little more NSFW, you know, it's not as clean, it's not as polished as Back to the Future is. And I think that's cool. I love to see other takes on established formulas or established iconography. But I don't know. I sound so old man. But I don't know. That's very interesting to me. And I wish that was more of an ethos permeating Hollywood at this point. And that's not to say I don't love a big franchise either. Like, my favorite movie that I've seen this year was Avengers Endgame. And if Far From Home is good, it'll probably be Far From Home. So I'm partial to established stuff, and I love it. I'm not saying I don't. I'm super looking forward to Watchmen this year. But even that, it seems like it's in a much different direction. And I don't know. What this Men in Black movie is giving me, it doesn't seem like it's much that I haven't seen before. And that's just one such example of something that's... It's pretty obvious, you know. You don't have to look far to find a movie that's not unlike Men in Black. But anyway, I think that'd be amazing. I kind of... I was just jumping on the trampoline and, you know, if you don't have any entertainment and you're just flipping around, you kind of go on autopilot and just start thinking. Or, I don't know, is that what you do? That's definitely what I do. But I was thinking, I almost kind of wrote this whole movie in my head of kind of Batman meets the comic, not the TV show, the comic Deadly Class. If you haven't read any of the series or you don't know what it is, it's basically this homeless kid in San Francisco is taken in by this group of, it's like a high school, but for assassins. And they're all really edgy. They're all like, they smoke, they drink, they drive underage, and like also murder people for a grade. And it's this very, dark and edgy is perfect for it, deconstruction of typical high school tropes, which I think would be good to displace in a superhero setting. The main character, that is Marcus, I believe. I think I might be confusing it with somebody else. I read so many comics. But yeah, and he is, I keep saying edgy, but it's true. You know, he's got the typical teenage thing, black skinny, or sorry, not teen, not now. 80s teenager thing, this other thing I forgot to mention, it's set in the 80s. It's not super important to the movie, but, or I'm so sorry, it's very late, but it's not particularly important to the comic. Anyway, it's, he is homeless, and he's got, like, a look going. It's, like, all black, black skinny jeans, Converse high tops, and he, you know, when he's not begging on the street, he's, like, learning stuff from old war vets, and, like, you know, he's killing people and jumping off rooftops and stuff, like, parkour and all kinds of stuff, and he's, you know, he's got a look, and he's smoking and drinking and just kind of succumbing to all kinds of crazy stuff, premarital sex, there's a little bit of that. He basically gets beaten half to death for it, but, he does try to indulge in it. But I could see a version of Bruce Wayne who, after his parents get killed, he snaps. But he doesn't snap in the way of, like, he's perpetually a child, which I think is kind of Batman. He's living out of child's fantasies of putting on a suit and playing superhero, and he's got the cool car and all the gadgets, and he's suave, he's a playboy, he's rich. But that's the key, is he's rich enough to play out these fantasies and actually do some good with them, whereas any other kid would have to be stuck wishing they could do that. But he can, and he's, you know, all he'll ever be doing is giving into a childhood wish fulfillment kind of high. And I think I could see a version of Bruce where when that happens, he doesn't go in an altruistic yet dark direction. He just goes in a dark direction. Like, I could see, you know, he's trying to drown out his sorrows, so he's smoking, he's on LSD, he's drinking, he's stealing, like, the cars out of the garage and taking joyrides around Gotham, trying parkour, you know, like, he's almost got a death wish kind of thing, just seeing how far can I push it before I end up like them. And then, you know, he's exposed to some horrible stuff while he's out there, and he decides, I'll make a difference, but maybe not making a difference like Batman does, maybe more like the Punisher does, just straight up murking him. And I also think that this stuff doesn't necessarily have to be all kids. Like, this would be very much 15, 16-year-old thing that I'm envisioning, but I could definitely see that just being the first half, and then the second half is 10 years on, and he's still doing this, and then something changes, and the plot kicks into gear. But I think that kind of merging of interpretations to kind of create a recognizable yet very different character, very different story would be really interesting, and I'd love to see something like that. I think I'd be way more interested in that than another Batman movie, at least at this point. And then, yeah, I think the alt-reality Wonder Woman and Aquaman. Those ideas sound really cool. And like I said, I don't think that these types of stories necessarily lend themselves to culminating in a big Avengers-style team-up movie after, like, 5 years. But, hey, if they did it, I wouldn't be opposed. I won't lie, I'd buy a ticket. But, yeah, I think that going out of this movie, while it's not perfect, and I said my piece, I certainly loved a lot about it. Like, I keep going back to, but it was really well-paced. It's a good entry-level horror movie. Well, it didn't totally scare me. It had cool kills. It had great characters. And I think it lends itself to very, very interesting possibilities in the future if they follow through on some of the promises they're making here. So I hope that all comes to fruition. I would love to see more from this universe. And even longer, better movies, different kind of styles. I don't know. There's a lot. There's a lot they could do. And I hope they do. So, if you haven't seen it, and you've listened all the way through, what the fuck are you doing? I told you to jump ship and go see it, but, hey, maybe you like getting movies spoiled for you. I have a friend that likes that. Anyway. I really don't have much to say. Josh, final thoughts?
Hi, I actually forgot to mention this in the intro, but Josh doesn't like horror movies, so I jumped on the opportunity to do a movie that he would never watch.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I won't even watch 1978 Halloween. You sent me a screenshot of it one time, and it creeped me out.
Fuck.
That's actually why I've been sick all this time.
You know, Josh, I'm sorry. I'll never send you a picture of Halloween again. And I certainly won't send you a picture of Brightburn. Ooh, actually, hold on. Real quick before I go. Damn, that costume is so cool. Can I just say that? It's creepy, it's cool, it's simple, but I love it. But I won't send Josh a picture of it. Anyway, Josh isn't really sick because I sent him a picture of the asylum scene from Halloween. Because that's my favorite shot in the movie where they're all the mental patients are out in the yard and they're all like, what the fuck is that? It's a car, you dumbasses. And anyway, I'm gonna stop spinning my wheels, and I hope you enjoyed the review. If you liked Solo Podcast, I could do it again in the future. Say, I don't know, Josh goes on vacation and I'm stuck at home, and my options are either go to the pool, jump on the trampoline, play video games, or record a podcast. I could definitely record that podcast. But I'd love to make this not a very reoccurring thing. I much prefer talking to Josh. It's weird with this empty seat next to me. But I'm glad I did it. It's an experiment, and I hope you guys like it. I'm sorry it was a lot more rambling, a little more unprofessional, a little less structured. Wait, I just said a little more unprofessional. I'm sorry. A little less unprofessional, a little less structured than I normally like to keep these shows, but we'll see. We'll see. Thanks for listening through. I hope this was at least moderately entertaining. I hope I said something interesting. But I think I did. Let me know. Either way. And like I said, thanks for listening. If you want to check out our other episodes, if you haven't yet, please do. We are on... Shit. We are now... This is a new thing. Since the last episode, we are now on Instagram... at the Admit One Podcast, and you can email us at theadmitonepodcast@gmail.com, and you can find us on our website at theadmitonepodcast.com, or if that doesn't work, because there are some people who have been experiencing issues with it, sites.google.com/view/ theadmitonepodcast. So, yep. Visit those if you haven't. Follow us if you haven't. I know it's a new thing, but hopefully it'll start to spread the show. So, thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed. Let me know what you thought. Follow us, email us, visit us on our website, whatever. And have a good fucking day. Don't get murdered by an alien. You know, Batman versus Superman with murderous Superman versus murderous Batman would be really, really awesome. Oh wait, fuck, they already did that.